Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Focal Point podcast with Angela Marafino and Chantel Sims. In order to continue evolving as a forward-thinking industry that accepts others as they are, we need to hear more stories from diverse individuals regarding their struggles and successes throughout their careers in technology. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hi, I'm Chantel Sims.
And I'm Angela Marafino.
And this is Focal Point.
And today we have Chloe Mesdagi. She's our first ever interviewee. Welcome, Chloe.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be the first one.
This is our first episode, so I want to kind of go over, you know, some of the things we're going to be touching on. So mainly diversity and inclusion and what that looks like to different people and kind of how some people identify within those terms. And then we'll just expand from there, also highlighting any success stories or tough times due to, you know, maybe not being in a diverse or inclusive setting. So what does diversity in the workplace mean to you?
So diversity in the workplace, I like to state that, one, it's not just appearance, it's also how people function. So also how they see the world. So having diverse backgrounds is something that is what's needed in workplaces, because the more diverse minds and backgrounds and people, you have better ideas, cutting edge ideas. You think of things before you create them. So like, you don't make products that end up not working for a certain population. Having them incorporated makes your product stronger, but also it makes your company stronger on the culture front. I always say, like, whatever you see outside walking around in the neighborhood around your office and where your employees live, that should also be represented in the office as well.
Facts.
Yes. Totally agree.
Period.
Have you seen that for the majority of your experience in cybersecurity or tech? Did it look that way to you or not so much?
Not at all, Angela. Not at all. So before I went into InfoSec, I was in humanitarian work and also education in Oakland. And for myself, when I would go into the tech field, I just noticed it was pretty much all men and majority were white. And I think that was one of those things where, you know, you grew up in like a well diverse area and you go in this office and you're like, where am I? This does not reflect what's happening in these streets or in this city.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a huge culture shock. So it made me feel really uncomfortable because I'm used to working with all different backgrounds. But then I see these people that are running companies that claim they care about inclusion and diversity, but yet their entire board is all white men. It's like, how does that even work? Like, how does that work? And it stuns me. And then always being in the very beginning of security, I'd always have basically the C-level coming to me like, so how do we solve this problem for women at the company? And I'm like, are you going to pay me extra for this information? It's like they always come to you because of your background. It's tough. But I mean, at least they're like trying to learn more. But the thing is like the actions. It's not just words. It's actions that are needed to be had.
Right.
It always goes back to that cliche quote of actions speak louder than words.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about your background. So I know you're in the Bay Area now. How long have you been there and working in the industry?
So I'm born and raised in Oakland, California. There was a brief time I lived in the UK in Edinburgh. And I came back because Oakland is my home and my family is here. But my background itself is, it's really interesting because the one thing a lot of people don't know is that my last name, I'm Iranian. And a lot of people don't know that. And then when I do share it within security, sometimes that's a huge issue because of how the media portrays Iranians in America. Yeah. And I've received I've received a death threat before when they found out that I am. So I don't openly tell people because of that. But it's one of those things that people are very quick to judge based on like how I look. They think I'm straight. They think I'm, you know, I'm French probably from my first name usually.
Right.
And that's, it sucks because then you have to defend yourself because they're like, well, if you're Iranian, then aren't you supposed to have a hijab on? Don't you speak Arabic? Don't you do this? Like, you can't be
People
Persian.
Are ignorant.
Like, yeah, yeah. And then, like, if they're like, oh, wait, if you're not straight, then how come you have, like, the person that you dated is a male? Like, it's like, we're so quick to judge in this industry.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. And thanks for bringing that up too. So not only are you dealing with being judged based on the fact that you're a woman and your heritage, and you may not identify as cis white female. Can you go into a little more detail about that?
Yeah. So my sexuality is that I consider myself as pansexual. And the reason I don't talk openly about this anywhere, actually, I think this is the first time I've ever openly talked about it on air, but a lot of people have some beliefs about pansexual, which aren't true. So I don't tend to share it. But I've been, I guess, quote unquote, pansexual since I was little. I've always been attracted to all different types of genders. It's never been like, oh, this is a man, this is a woman, I'm attracted to them. So for those that don't know what pansexual is, it's basically, because it's rare to hear. It's not bisexual. A lot of people get them confused, but pansexuality is true. Basically having an attraction towards people regardless of their sex or gender identity. Basically, I guess you can say it's quote, quote, gender blind, which I don't like using that term. It's more about seeing them for who they are first rather than their gender. Mm-hmm. So I could be attracted to, depending on the kind of way that I see the person, I'm a big person that I fall for eyes. always. For me, it sucks because people that are pansexual, we kind of hide in the shadows. Mm-hmm. Because there's been times where you go and approach LGBTQ groups and they don't recognize you.
Right.
They'll say like, oh, you're just one of those people that wants attention. You're just going through a phase. And that's a hard thing for us because then we don't know who to go to. So when we find out that there's this other person who's pansexual, it's really great. But it's one of those things that you don't know until you have a conversation with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard because they have all these other ideas that pansexuals are not monogamous in their relationships. That's bullshit. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but
yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Because all my relationships have been monogamous and long term. And the other thing is that sometimes they believe like that you're attracted to like everyone. That's not, no, it's not how, it's like the exact same way how you're attracted to a person. It's like, sometimes right. There's someone, sometimes there isn't someone.
Right.
Definitely not everyone.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing is there is also this idea that pansexuals, they're not respectful towards gender identities. That's not true either. We understand gender is part of our identity. We respect that. We acknowledge that. We don't ignore or dismiss. It's just that when I'm attracted to is the person before the gender. That's pretty much all that it is.
Right.
Does that mean that you or most pansexuals identify as non-binary, or is that not necessarily the same outlook?
That's a really good question. So there is a difference between how we see ourselves as our gender and our sexuality, and they're two separate things. So for myself, I'm one of those people that I consider myself as a woman, but I also can happily consider myself as non-binary at the same time. I'm always having that conflict in yeah. my mind mm. since I was little because I don't really like to accept any of the gender like norms on anyone.
Sure.
And I don't like it on me either. So yeah. I could see that being more of a non-binary thing, but I also acknowledge that the way that I look comes off as a woman and that has an impact. And that is how I am who I am today because of those situations and those experiences. My sexuality is that it can be like anyone. I can be attracted to any gender,
right?
Or even as someone who's a non-conforming in gender, like it doesn't matter to me at the end. It's about the person. But yeah, that is a common question that I know that pansexual folks get is like, don't you have to be non-binary? It's more of like, no, you don't have to be. There are some that are, but we're, you know, we just have those two things as separate things, as identities.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Okay. This is great.
You know, hearing like what you're saying about the rhetoric that you hear as someone that identifies as pansexual, I never really connected it to the rhetoric that you hear as a bi person. I identify as bisexual. I'm married to a woman. She identifies as queer. It's just interesting where when choices come in, you tend to get a little bit more blowback from the community. Is that like a weird thing to say? It's strange,
no,
right?
No, it's true.
It's
very
true. It's like we can't have choice. Yeah. Like, I'm bi. So when I say bi, I'm attracted to people that identify as a man or people that identify as a woman. And I happen to marry a woman, you know? So I don't know. It's just really weird to hear that rhetoric of like, oh, you're confused or something like that. I don't get it.
Like that. It's been really, really hard, like, when growing up and knowing that you have this sense of, like, because when I didn't know that pansexuality was, there was actually a term for it. Mm-hmm. So I would keep it to myself, like, am I bi? But I'm attracted to all genders. What does that make me?
Right.
There's something wrong with me. There's something that's not wired properly here. And I remember, like, you know, going to people and trying to understand more about the LGBTQ community. And I remember like people around that are adults as a kid saying like, oh, people that are bi, they just don't know better of which side they are in.
Isn't that crazy?
And I'm like, I'm like, I don't get this. They're like, they're going through a phase. And then it's always like, women just want it for attention. They're just getting it out of their system. And then it's always funny because there's, a couple of years ago, I was talking to this guy who considers himself queer, and we were talking about sexuality, and for the first time ever, I decided to open up to someone about it. And I'm like, I'm so glad to know that you're one of those people, because I'm one of those people too. In a sense, I'm pansexual. And he turned around and was like, Chloe, you're not pansexual, you're straight. Come on now. You're just, no,
what?
No, you're not. No, and I'm just like, and that was the time when I shut down and never talked about it ever again.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
It's like, how is somebody else going to tell you what you
exactly.
are?
Exactly.
Right?
That's the part that kills me.
Exactly. Because I'm always concerned of what this means for the younger generation is true. That, you know, they need a place to learn more about their sexuality. And if they're not accepted in the LGBTQ form, or even in a straight form, where are they going to get that assistance and help? And that's something that like I really hope for, because I have really good parents that accepted me for who I am. I think my parents, when I kind of hinted at it, they're like, they already knew.
Yeah.
They just didn't know what was the term for it.
Sure.
But yeah.
Have you felt like you couldn't not only like talk about that in community just because of, you know, kind of the responses you've gotten, but that you can't really be your entire self at work either because of, the feedback that you got in the past?
So that is very true. I don't share what my sexuality is publicly. Usually. Mm-hmm. This is like literally the first time. And I actually use the term literally correct. But no, I don't openly tell people. If people ask and I feel comfortable with them, I will share that. But I even like, I won't tell someone on the, like if I was dating, I wouldn't tell someone on the first date.
Yeah.
Like because of all these misconceived notions of what it is to be pansexual.
Yeah.
Because then you get really stupid questions next. And so,
of course, it has to be a stupid question.
They're curious. They're curious. All questions are good questions because they're trying to understand you. But when they're questions about, like, so does that mean threesomes are okay? Or, like, are you going to cheat on me? And I'm just like, what?
It doesn't make sense. Right.
And I think this is the last date we're ever going to have.
great. I feel your pain, though, and I know Chantel and I have spoken about this in the past, but so this will be my first time talking about this openly, too, is because I never really tell anybody, like, my personal business at all, because I'm just like, well, if they ask, I'll tell them. I'm not, like, intentionally not telling anyone, right. But I don't feel the need to talk about my personal life, and I don't know if it's because, like, and we're both from the Southeast, is it because it was like, you know, you kind of don't want to talk about it there?
Yeah.
And so I was kind of like trained to like not talk about my personal life growing up as a young adult, like regardless of how I identified. I got such into the habit of getting people to know me first. And then I was like, then I would feel comfortable to kind of like tell them, open up and tell them, you know, more about myself and identify as bi. And then I have a girlfriend and, you know, be more open with them about what'd you do this weekend and like have normal conversations. Right. And always kind of felt like, you just kind of don't say anything. You're just like, no, hung out with my cat, you know, or whatever. You know, I think now it's kind of changing because like you said before, right, it's more about being a role model for younger generations. And if we can do it, they can do it, right? And so
yeah,
hopefully it won't take them as long to kind of feel comfortable opening up.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I feel a little bit more hopeful with the younger generation, at least, just speaking from my experience of hearing my nieces and my nephew talk about sexuality. I remember when I told my family about my wife, we had just started dating at the time, and I thought it was going to be this huge deal. I like set a time and date to like sit the kids down in the dining room to like talk to them about it. And, you know, they were kind of standing up, sitting down, whatever. And I told them, I was like, so I have a girlfriend. And literally my oldest niece's reaction was, she shrugged her shoulders and said, so, you know how many of my friends are gay? And I was like, okay. And then they just like went on about their business, you know? And I was like, right, well, this is Sonia.
I love that.
Yeah, like they just like really didn't care. And, you know, now today they love my wife. They are crazy about her. But yeah, I think it's also important, too, that the younger generation knows that whatever they decide in regards to how they come out, if it works for them, then it's the right answer. There's no right way. Right.
Yep.
I've actually told Angela about my experience teaching in Chicago public schools and teaching at one school on the West Side. And I did not. Because it was a predominantly Black community and because that's the community I've grown up in, I know how some homophobia can kind of come alive from time to time. And yeah. I was very, very aware of that. And I lied about like having a girlfriend, you know, this is before we were married, but I would say bae. I wouldn't use she, her pronouns. I wouldn't say he, him. I would just be like, I'm going to go on a date mm-hmm. with my bae this weekend or whatever. And I know after doing that and, you know, basically lying to one of the teachers that was just like, "If are you undercover or something? Because that's what lesbians say. They say bae, you know, so that people don't know." And I was just like, oh, no, it's a guy, you know. And I just remember just feeling terrible afterwards. And I was just like, I never want to feel like that again. I never want to feel like I'm hiding who I am. And if somebody doesn't accept any and everything that comes with me, they don't have a spot in my life anyway. Or I'm not going to allow them to have space, occupy space anywhere around me. So ever since I like left that school and I ended up going to another school and teaching there before moving into cybersecurity, but I'm very open with it now. I'm just like, this is my wife. This is my cat, you know, and I keep it moving.
It feels better, right? To just be able to be like, yep, this is who I am. I'm going to go back to work now and do what I'm doing because I'm good at it.
Yeah.
Like you hired me to do a job. I'm going to do it and stop worrying about like what people think about me. Chloe, I wanted to ask you, you know, so we've talked about all these things and thank you so much for sharing. Has that kind of been the basis for why you decided to start We Are Hackers? And I know we're all a part of We Are Hackers.
Yep.
So excited to hear about this.
Yeah. It was definitely a tricky situation because at first the reason why We Are Hackers was created was because I came across a statistic in BugCrowd. They had this report that came out in like 2018 that stated that only 4% of hackers identify as women And I was like, well, that's got to change. That's very low. And so then I was on a phone call with someone and talking about like, yeah, we really need the community to increase this number. So it's open to all different, you know, stages of your hacking career. Even if you're a very beginner, it's okay. It's good to be curious and having a safe space to be curious to learn those things. And so Women Hackers was created. And this was for basically for those that identify as women and also non-binary. And then it came to a point where I kept wanting to relook over that name, because when you're non-binary and forced to be in a group that you feel comfortable to feel comfortable in, and it has women in the title, I can understand that. And so what happened was that I also had someone reach out to me saying, hey, have you thought about changing your name? Because that would be better for those. If this is a group also supporting non-binary, it might be best to change the name of it. And I completely agree. And when I got that, it only took one person to reach out to me and be like that. And that changed everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then I put in a vote in Women Hackers at the time. And it was like, hey, everyone, should we change our name? So then it's more reflective of the community that we're in. So people that are non-binary feel supported here. And the thing was, it was very eye-opening to see the people in there and how little some of them know about gender.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was heartbreaking to watch that. Seeing how people were tearing apart, like, well, why should we change our name? We don't want to have any men come in. That was a hard moment, because I realized that what people were doing in that moment were also doing the same thing that like women have faced too, in some ways, where you're not accepted here. We're not changing our name for you. This is not inclusion. And I'm like, no, this is not great. So the voting, it turned out that it was to keep the name of Women Hackers. And I was really disappointed, like really disappointed. And heartbroken, like completely heartbroken. And this was around Christmas time. So all this was happening around Christmas time. I was heartbroken to see this, because I'm like, no, women, we need to do better than that. We've been marginalized. We should understand these marginalized issues. And so then I was like, forget this. I'm going to put together a board. If I put together a board, then we can make a decision and we'll be able to move forward, because I'm tired of it. They're going to have to get used to this. And so I connected with Angela. It's like, hey, I need your help. And then I remember the first time I was like, hey, do you want to be on the board? Sure. I would love to. Great. We need to change the name. Can you help me on this? And she's like, oh, I see what you've been doing there. I'm like, great. I'm glad to have you on my task force.
I love it. I love it.
I got another person in, Maria. And I'm like, Maria, hey, you want to be on the board? And then she's like, sure. And I'm like, excellent. We need to change her name. And then she's like, okay, I'm glad about this. Because Maria, she also described herself as similar to me, which is like as a woman, but also non-binary. And so I'm like, all right, excellent, let's do this. And so we came together and we changed the name. On one call, we figured out a name, which is We Are Hackers, and we fixed our code of conduct to allow anyone who is not a cis male, and for those that don't know what cis males are people that are born as a man and identify as a man. That's pretty much all you need to know. And so that's basically what it is. It's basically a community for anyone who is not a cis man, because all those are marginalized genders in our industry. And also around the world too, not just in the industry, all around the world. It is so hard to be who, you know, each three of us are in other places around the world. And we wanted to make that a safe space. And so that's how We Are Hackers got rebranded, and the journey behind scenes that I don't think too many people know of, but that sometimes that's what you have to do. And if you're a company that's practicing diversity and inclusion, you're going to have to take those steps too. They're drastic. It's going to make some people uncomfortable. But think of all those people that are already uncomfortable because you're not doing those things.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Completely agree.
And just to clarify, it's not because we don't like cis white males or cis males in general. It's It's just that they've predominantly made up the entire tech workforce for a long time, and we're trying to change that and also have a safe space to kind of do our own techie nerd.
There's also a ton of other spaces that exist specifically for cis males. Like, they have a ton of spaces. So, I mean, yeah.
Right. Yep. I mean, there's so many hacker forums out there, and it's really the hacker forums where it's like dominated by men. And that was one of the reasons why We Are Hackers was kind of created at the time. Women Hackers was created because I was in these bug bounty forums and it was all men. And so it was really funny because I post in general, I'm like, hey everyone, I created a special channel for those that are not males. If you want to join, send me a DM. And it was only like 8 people in a group that had thousands of people.
Wow.
Oh.
And that's when I was like, okay, we have a problem here.
There's a reason for the space. I like to call We Are Hackers Wawa.
Yeah.
Just because I'm extra in that way. Just trying to pronounce out the acronym, so don't judge me. But yeah, I tell people I'm part of Wawa, the Wawa Click.
I like that.
It's like,
I think I might start
doing that. Yeah, Wawa Click, you want to join Wawa? Come check us out. Let's go. Yep.
I love that.
I might
Go for it. Go for it. Put it on the sticker. Wawa. Wawa's unite.
Wawa.
Shit, I don't know.
Yeah.
I like it. It works for me.
I like it. Angela?
I love it.
Angela, we need to get on the board on this. We're going to have WAWA as our new acronym.
Perfect.
Or our new way of make naming it publicly.
Give me more work to
there
do.
We go. It's all the time. It's all the time.
And so, you know, Chantel, I don't know if you joined the We Are Hackers, well, but back then it was the Women Hackers Conference, and I know you spoke, but I don't know if you were able to like go in any of the Discord channels or see any of the chats. One of the things that I thought was really cool even back then before we changed the name was that people felt open enough to share their identities with each other, whether they already knew each other or not. I don't know for a fact, but I think some of them met in the channel, and it was nice to be able to see that result from, you know, the conference that we threw, that people were comfortable enough in there to talk to each other and not feel like they would get judged. And so that's, I think, really important to me, and I'm sure Chloe as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely beautiful to see and watch.
So, Chloe, what do you think we can do going forward? I mean, I know you've started these initiatives, but, you know, what else is really, like, important in the workplace for other people, especially, like, hiring managers to start thinking about?
I think what they need to start doing is reading, getting out of their comfort zone, and also to really look at their board and see, you know, how does your board look? Does it showcase how the rest of your company is? I do believe in I hate using this term, the trickle-down effect. Basically, if on your board, the more diverse it is, the more diverse the rest of your company will be. That's actually very much true and has been proven. And I think that's what the thing is that when you have a diverse board, the voices of those that have been underrepresented are now heard, and they're very loud. And I think, as myself, that's the one thing I have noticed, is that you have more authority. You also have more way of pursuing changes and persuading people that this is an issue. I think that's definitely one of those things, is that we need to have more diverse initiatives for the board, but also just look internally. If you have people that are beyond manager and they're all like white cis males, you have a problem. Like, you have a legit problem, and you probably should look into that. But there's a lot of great books out there to really understand different cultures, different backgrounds, kind of ingrain in yourself, get to know other cultures, religions. That's really important too. It's so important that we all take the necessary steps to be more inclusive and understanding of each other, because that's the only way we're going to grow as humanity in our industry, and also to have more empathy. You have to understand each other. We have to reduce the judgment. We have to get to know and hear people out. But we also can always take a stance when someone is deciding to push a narrative that is not correct. It's really important to stand up for those that are underrepresented. So if you have a privilege, it's to speak up for those people, to protect those people, push for their existence in the workplace and outside the workplace. That's really important.
Yeah, and I really like that you said that, because I still find it really hard to, at least as a Black woman, or someone that identifies as, well, you're just Black, but I'm Black and a woman. I was about to say identify as Black, but no, let's not make that.
There's that one lady though. I think it's a thing, right? All,
yeah, she's a hot mess. Yeah, we're not even gonna go.
No,
right there. But as a Black woman, like, I find it really hard to like go and question, you know, someone that might be on a board or something. I of course sit back and I observe and I have my own thoughts and my own opinions about lack of diversity that surrounds me. But how do you get that confidence to even go and speak? You know, I think for me, I just think to myself, they're going to think I'm an angry Black woman, which I hate that stereotype. I hate it with a passion. They're going to think I'm being just really difficult or something. It's a thing, though. So, like, how do you get that confidence to even go up and just say anything in the first place?
I would say the one thing I've learned in my career is it's all about who your boss is. If your boss is someone who is listening, being there for you, pushing for your rights, that person is going to take care of you and push back whenever needed. The thing is that when we have bosses that don't do that, they're being complicit. And that's a problem, because then no change happens. You're not being heard. You're going to be so angry too, because you keep saying like, hey, these are issues. And I can imagine, like, being, if you are, I know whenever one is like marginalized and singled out in a company, it makes things very difficult. So it's really important is that when you're interviewing for a job, that this is a boss that you feel you can trust your career with. If you don't, then maybe you need to keep looking. And if you're working somewhere where you have a boss that you don't feel comfortable sharing of how you're feeling isolated, or you're not being heard, or you feel voiceless in your company and you feel like the company is making mistakes and not learning from them, then it's time for you to find a new boss or find a different company. And I know that's a really hard thing to do, but I have paid a price for like having to deal with that for too many times. So it's better to just
start. I've definitely been in that situation already. Not going to drop names, of course, but I've been in that situation of being at a company and not feeling like I had a voice. And when I did try to speak up, it just, I got that stereotypical pushback of like being difficult or an angry Black woman type of thing. So yeah, I knew then, right then and there, like, oh, it's time to dip out.
Yeah. Well, it's also a thing they don't understand is that if you don't feel respected or appreciated, or you feel like they're ignoring you, you're not going to do incredible work. You're going to do just mediocre work. If you go beyond and you're there and you have that trust between the manager and the employee, that employee is going to do stuff beyond anyone can imagine.
Right. Completely
agree.
That's
why it's so important to care about these things.
Chloe, back to when you were talking about identifying what your board looks like now and trying to change that, if it is all, you know, unique, it's not unique and everybody looks the same or has the same background. I think as two people who have had to try to select a board, it's also very hard if no one's volunteering who doesn't look like the other people on the board. So I want to note that is a thing that, you know, you can't make people join a role or like take on that position if they're not interested or they don't feel comfortable. And so it is hard, I think, but you know, the more that they see themselves or people like them, then the more they'll volunteer.
That is very much true. I mean, if you look at any board, if you see on there that, for example, and I'll use these examples because these have happened in the past. If I go to, when I'm applying for a role, and if I see that the board doesn't have a woman, I know that it's going to be an uphill battle. Right. And that's the thing where I'll consider whether or not to apply. And the same thing is, the thing everyone should know is that for every nonprofit out there, organization, there's always a seat at the table. It might not be announced, but they're looking always. And so if you see an organization that you want to see grow, that you see potential with, please don't just not move forward with it. message them. If you get rejected, you get rejected. But rejection happens all the time. We have to get more comfortable with it. But it is really hard to try to submit yourself to be on a board for a nonprofit if it's like is like you on right. there. It is really difficult. But those are like the organizations that need you in particular because of that.
Absolutely. Chloe, do you think that since, and I don't know if you've always been thinking this much about diversity and inclusion, it kind of sounds like you have from the beginning, but do you think that your career has actually benefited from kind of being more open-minded and talking openly about these topics?
I think it's definitely helped in a lot of ways. It takes a lot of strength, and I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have the backing. I didn't have like people in the community that would support me. But I have to admit, there's definitely been times where things in my career don't happen because I've been vocal about these right. things. And that's the sad part, is that you will find people that are like, oh, she's too liberal, or she's too much out there. And I'm just like, I really am not. I don't really talk too much about political things because of this reason, because I know it closes doors. But the reality is that I also have that privilege of speaking forward about these sure. issues, because I have people that still wouldn't mind me joining them or being part of them with them on any project. And that's really important, is that when you have privilege, you need to speak out and you need to help lift others.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're normal. You're pretty normal. You just love tea and Shibas. I mean,
yeah, I just I don't tea think and she and having a weird obsession with the little prince book. Yes.
so true. Excellent. Was there any final thoughts you would like to leave our listeners with?
Be kind to one another. Like, this is the one time I would say, like, please be kind to one another. Don't be quick to judge. Listen to each other. Find out a little bit. There's always a common ground, and it's always important to understand that even if the person is completely opposite of you, just note that there's always a connection between you and that person. Always. That's what makes us human. That's what makes us connected. And we need to do better as humans by being there for each other. Wearing masks is one of those, because you impact another person's life. Even if you don't feel comfortable wearing a mask, you're showing a lot about how you see others in the world and how much you value other people's lives. Mm-hmm. So that's what we need to be more focused on, is how do we support one another during these surreal times? And how do we, and the hardest part about that is that we have to look at ourselves in the mirror and question, what are the things that we need to work on about ourselves and take the initiative and actions? It's uncomfortable, but it's a necessity to be able to be a better person in this world.
There you have it. Chloe Mesdagi, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. We're so lucky.
Bye, Chloe. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, I'm glad that I got to share with you guys. Thanks, everything.
You're the best.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Focal Point Podcast with Angela Marafino and Chantel Sims. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. We'll be right back.